Grisang Space Station. The Grisang had built a space station in orbit around the innermost planet of a red dwarf star, not because the planet or the star were in any way interesting. What was interesting were the shattered remains of an elder starship in orbit around the innermost planet, a treasure trove well worth the expense of the Grisang building and maintaining a space station to establish a permanent presence there. Sometime around 300 years ago, there had been a fight between the Grisang there, or a rival clan had raided the station, because a major battle had damaged the station badly enough for the place to be abandoned ever since. The abandoned space station was both the closest and easiest site for us to investigate. Closest, because of the roundabout journey we had to take through multiple wormholes, still meant we wouldn't reach the first site for 38 days. 38 dull, boring days cruising through isolated interstellar space, jumping, recharging engines, jumping again, and occasionally transiting wormholes. The first 2 weeks after leaving Earth behind were reasonably stimulating, with our new merry band of pirates getting used to being in space, being aboard a starship, being aboard a captured alien starship. Setting up a training routine kept people interested, which was critical for keeping special forces types sharp and focused. The first 2 weeks included a first-time jump for most of the crew, their first wormhole transit, a lot of first things. Firsts were good. Firsts were interesting. Firsts held people's attention and kept them from getting bored. Then the tedium set in. Even the pilots, the only people aboard who needed to actually do anything other than eat, exercise, and sleep, got bored with their regular duties. Mostly, the pilot duty consisted of waiting for jump engines to charge, Skippy to program a jump into the autopilot, and the chief pilot on duty pressing a button. There was always at least a little tension following a jump, when the Dutchman's sensor net determined whether there were other ships around. The crew on duty and the CIC scanned the sensors. The two pilots had fingers poised next to buttons for triggering a pre-programmed emergency jump away. Then, when nothing was detected, after 5 minutes, the all-clear signal was given and everyone went back to the tedium of routine. The pilots spent most of their time, unless they were sleeping, but often including while eating and running on a treadmill in the gym, learning how to fly first our Theranin Star Carrier, then our beat-up Grisang frigate, and finally Theranin dropships. One of our new pilots, a hotshot French flyboy who came to the Dutchman from serving as a test pilot for the Raphael fighter, told me the training was beyond tough. It was crushing, impossible. And he was one of Desai's best students. I told him that Captain Desai had flown a dropship, then a frigate, then a star carrier with zero training in combat. And the guy did have a point. I talked to Desai and Skippy about adjusting the tempo of the flight training. After the first 2 weeks, the new pilots adjusted to drinking from the fire hose. Desai started sleeping more than 4 hours a night. Boredom was bad for regular people. Boredom for gung-ho elite spec ops people could be deadly. The third week of our pleasure cruise, two Indian paratroopers suffered broken bones in a training accident. Thanks to Dr. Skippy's magical use of Theranin medical technology, their broken bones would heal fully in 2 weeks. Unfortunately, they couldn't resume normal training until they were fully healed. When we arrived at our first target, those two paratroopers would be unable to join their fellows in any action. They'd either be staying aboard the Dutchman or operating combots. I went to the ship's sick bay. Nobody wanted to call it an infirmary, as that implied a special forces soldier could be infirm, which was unsatisfactory. The two mildly chagrined paratroopers were sitting on the two small Theranin beds. Not actually beds, they were some sort of form-fitting gel. Both already had their broken legs encased in hard sleeves with thin tubes connected to the beds. The tubes provided nutrients and nanomachines that knitted the bones and tissues back together, all controlled by Dr. Skippy, the mad scientist. Both of the injured men were eager to get mobile as soon as possible, of course. I'd already talked to Skippy to assure he didn't release them from sickbay until they weren't likely to further injure themselves by overdoing their rehab exercises. Sickbay was crowded with me, the two injured men, and six scientists who were trying to understand the Theranin technology Skippy was using. "Are you learning how all this equipment works?" I asked the doctors. "No," said Skippy before any of the doctors could reply. "That would be a huge waste of time, I've told you that. You don't need clumsy monkeys poking around your insides with crude knives when Dr. Skippy can fix everyone up with medical magic. Real medicine. not the idiot guesswork you monkeys use. Yes, I said, irritated at having this conversation again. You have told me that, and I've told you that if, or I should say, when, you find the collective and leave us, our own doctors need to be able to use this equipment to care for the crew. Never going to happen. That is unsat. For crying out loud, stop flapping your jaws for a minute and listen to me. You might learn something. I doubt it, but miracles do happen. Skippy sounded peeved, more than usual. This equipment relies entirely on nanoscale technology. I'm able to control the nanomachines by the picosecond, and they can move individual atoms around to assemble or disassemble molecules as needed. The equipment was designed to be controlled by Theranin Cybernetics through their medical AI. It's a particularly stupid AI. Even you may be able to beat it at chess. Wait, what am I saying? No, that's crazy talk. Don't know what I was thinking. It's a limited AI, and the system architecture doesn't have the capacity for me to load anything useful into it. It barely has the memory to store details of human anatomy and physiology. Real physiology, not the ignorant guesses you monkeys have in your medical journals. Without me controlling and coordinating the nanomachines, the whole system doesn't work, since your doctors don't have cybernetics, and Theranin cybernetics can't be adapted to humans. There is no way you monkeys can use any of this equipment by yourselves. You done? Barely got started, but that's enough explanation for you. Fine. You are arguably the most intelligent being in the galaxy right now. That we know of, right? I am by far the most intelligent being in the galaxy. It's about time you gave me the respect. Since you are so incredibly smart, then you should be able to figure something out for us to have even some limited sort of control of this medical equipment, at least enough for basic medical care. Consider it a challenge, Skippy. A challenge? Building an escalator to the center of the galaxy would be a challenge. Teaching monkeys to use real technology? Impossible, he complained. Impress me, Skippy. I knew he couldn't resist that. I'll give you mad props if you can do that. Great. Fine. You want the impossible. What am I supposed to do, build a really, really tiny pair of tweezers so you can move molecules around by hand? Stupid monkeys. Damn it, I hate my life. I should have stayed on a dusty shelf in that warehouse. Bye, Skippy. Have fun. I left him grumbling behind me. When I was done in sick bay, including listening to the two paratroopers apologize for having rendered themselves temporarily combat ineffective, and me assuring them that accidents happen, I hurried to the galley for dinner. Tonight's meal was meatloaf or salmon, and I was eager to get there before all the meatloaf was gone. There was enough meatloaf. What there wasn't much of was lively conversation. Everyone was beginning to get bored already with the routine. The time and vast distances we had to travel had sunk into the people's minds, and the crew were subdued. That, and the training accident, had put a damper on morale. Ugh, his room is totally dead. Why all the gloomy faces? Skippy's annoying voice came out of the speaker in the ceiling. It's been a tough week, Skippy, I grumbled while staring at my plate. The meatloaf had gotten slightly cold. Serves me right for showing up late for dinner. And then spending too much time chatting instead of eating. It was okay. It had some strange spice in it that I was trying to figure. Nutmeg? Yes, nutmeg. Not a lot of it, but who puts nutmeg in meatloaf? Looking across the table at Lieutenant Hendrick's salmon in a maple and ginger glaze, I was beginning to regret my dinner choice. Tonight's dinner had been cooked by our U.S. Special Forces teams, the Rangers and SEALs. And we've been cruising in interstellar space in total darkness with nothing to look at. We could all use a change of scenery. Skippy had a point, though. I needed to do something to boost crew morale. Maybe I should assign someone to be the ship's morale officer. One of the PowerPoint decks that I was supposed to study probably had some advice about maintaining unit morale. How did a crew keep up morale on a nuclear missile submarine? Those boomers were submerged and silent for months at a time. Like us, they didn't have anything to look at. Unlike them, we had windows. I know what your problem is, Colonel Joe, Skippy announced. You need to get laid. Hey, Major Tammy, you should mate with Joe. Skippy! I almost choked on meatloaf, and Major Sims, who had just taken a sip of water, spewed it across the table in front of her. The soldier seated next to her had to pat her on the back to keep her from choking. What? You're a male, she's a female, and for a monkey you don't smell too bad. Stop it, I shouted. Everyone in the galley was staring at me. Hey, you know you need some sweet loving soon, Joe. Major Tammy, you should have seen the raging boner he had in the shower this morning. Now Sims had gone from shocked to amused. Her shoulders shook as she tried to suppress a laugh. Everyone was now trying not to look at me and laughing. Putting my head in my hands, I banged my forehead on the table. Skippy, this is private stuff. You don't talk about it in public. I am Major Sims's commanding officer. What, because you're a colonel, you can't bang anyone in your command? Like that matters way out here. Well, you could mate with one of the science team. This is good timing, because most of the women are ovulating this week, so they're extra horny. I saw all the women's faces register shock. Skippy, shut the hell up, I shouted. Man, talk about ungrateful. I'm trying to get you laid. You're sure not doing well on your own. Don't ask me to be your wingman again. I didn't ask, and you're a wing nut, not a wingman. In the future, maybe I needed to consider taking all my meals in my cabin or my office. Major Sims, I apologize. She shook her head, still not trying to laugh. Colonel, we all know Skippy by now. No need to apologize for him. Thank you. Everyone, I'd appreciate it if this stayed between us, meaning the roughly 20 people in the galley. And since I know that's not going to happen, I added honestly, knowing this was way too juicy not to quickly spread throughout the ship. Keep in mind Skippy said it. I didn't. Damn it. After that, I was never able to look at Major Sims without wondering, you know, what she'd be like in bed. I didn't need any more distractions. Jump, recharge, jump again. It was monotonous, and we had a long way to go to our first target. When we left Earth to find Skippy's magical elder radio, or whatever the hell it really is, we still had the same problem that made us go to Earth in the first place. When we raided the Kristang Asteroid Research Base, we'd found an Elder Communications node, the thing Skippy thought should allow him to contact the Collective. It hadn't. The stupid thing didn't work, or Skippy didn't know how to make it work, or it worked fine, but there was no Collective to talk to, or it worked, Skippy had contacted the Collective, and they decided he is an asshole and ignored him. I was betting on that last one. Since the first comm node didn't satisfy Skippy, he had wanted to check out the two other sites he knew for certain had intact Elder comm nodes. The two other sites, I had told him even before we went to Earth, were impossible for us to raid. Forget about it. Not going to happen. The first site was on a heavily populated Theranan planet. The second was 9,500 light-years from Earth at an installation controlled by a species with technology superior to the Theranan. Neither site was remotely possible for us to raid, even with the Dutchmen now crewed by badass special forces. Maybe, by some combination of luck, Skippy magic, and a random miracle, we might succeed in raiding one site. The odds were heavily in favor of us failing. Our enemies discovering humans had stolen a Theranan starship and Earth becoming the focus of some very pissed-off aliens. That was not an optimal mission outcome. Before we departed Earth, we, meaning mostly me, had persuaded Skippy to expand his search beyond places confirmed to have his precious comm node to places that were likely to have a comm node. Sites that were known to have a substantial collection of Elder artifacts, even though the Theranan database Skippy downloaded didn't list a comm node in the inventory, could very possibly have a comm node. Skippy said that before the Elders ascended or beamed up or whatever the hell they'd done, comm nodes were scattered all over the galaxy. Skippy had grumbled about trying to predict the location of comm nodes being a waste of time, and that such an analysis would take forever. In this case, forever took him 7 minutes and 12 seconds in meat sack time. After completing his analysis, he had admitted that there were two very promising sites within 3,000 light-years of Earth that were much easier and safer to approach, investigate, and if needed, raid. The first site was another Kristang research base, the space station that had been abandoned after a fight between two or more Kristang factions left it damaged beyond repair. According to the data Skippy had access to, the space station had held a variety of low-value Elder artifacts and various devices and doodads from higher species that the Kristang there had been trying to reverse engineer for their clan without much success. What Skippy hoped was the Dutchman's sensors could scan the debris field around the station, and our merry band of pirates could board it to see if one of the magic radios were there. Since the wormhole shift, that star system had been ignored by the Kristang, and Skippy thought we wouldn't find anyone there. He thought that, anyway. The second site was going to be a bit tougher for us to investigate, tough enough that I hoped to find an alternative. The good news is that it was a known Elder site that had been located by the Maxulks themselves, but barely explored by anyone. It was a large site. It had been a substantial and busy facility back when the Elders were using it, so Skippy was highly confident we would find a communications node, multiple communications nodes there. The bad news was very bad. First, it was a long distance from Earth, a journey of 4 months to get there from our current position. The journey was longer than it strictly needed to be because we had to avoid several wormhole clusters that were heavily used by the Maxulks. The first part of the bad news was merely inconvenient. The second part of the bad news was dangerous. Extremely dangerous. When the Maxulks found the Elder site, they had not been looking for nice toys like communications nodes. They had been looking for weapons. Elder weapons. Devices the Elders may not have built as weapons. Devices that could be used for incredible destructive effect. Devices that, according to Skippy, could make stars explode. And exploding a star was a simple trick, compared to some of the technology the Elders routinely used. At the time the Maxulks found that Elder site and its massive destructive potential, they already had a substantial arsenal of Elder devices that could be used as weapons against the Rindaloo. According to Skippy's admittedly foggy memories, the Rindaloo discovered that the Maxulks planned to attack them and force their hand. The Maxulks had to accelerate their plans and launch the attack before they were completely ready. The Rindaloo hit back with their own stock of Elder weapons, and a war raged for a brief period before Sentinels detected the use of Elder weapons and struck at both sides. The Sentinels, intelligent monitors left behind by the Elders to prevent unauthorized use of Elder technology by younger species, did not care that the Maxulks had fired first. They did not even seem to care where in the galaxy Elder weapons had been used. Maxulks and Rindaloo star systems, far from the fighting, were hit by Sentinels with devastating effect. The purpose of the Sentinels seemed to be to destroy star-faring civilizations. Civilizations capable of abusing Elder technology, whether they had acquired such technology or not. Both the Maxulks and the Rindaloo feared extinction, so powerful and relentless were the Sentinels. Then, suddenly, for no known reason, the Sentinel attack halted, and the Sentinels disappeared and went dormant, sleeping again, but always watchful. Since that time, the shell-shocked Maxulks and Rindaloo had held their Elder weapons in reserve and continued their long war through proxies such as the Theranin and Jirapatha, who had proxies of their own. And the Elder site that the Maxulks had been exploring at the time the Sentinels struck had been off-limits to everyone, by general agreement. Skippy thought that since he was built by the Elders, he could get us there without being detected by the extensive web of sensors left by the Maxulks. His plan sucked. After a 4-month journey to get close to the site, we would fly in normal space for another 6 months, sneaking up on the target by crawling slowly along. The Flying Dutchman could not slow down much, as firing the engines would risk detection. So we would need to fly across the final distance to the target in dropships. Landing teams would spend almost a month in dropships under Skippy's crappy plan. After we located and picked up a communications node, the landing teams would fly back to the Dutchman, and the ship would continue traveling silently through normal space for another 4 months before we could risk a jump. Skippy's plan sucked. He wanted us to commit to a 14-month voyage into an area of space that was closely monitored by both the Maxulks and Elder Sentinels because he thought we had a good chance of finding a comm node. I hated his plan. I told him that. I also did not have an alternative plan. Before committing to the second target, we were going to investigate the first target, the supposedly abandoned Kristang space station. Hopefully, we would find a comm node there. If not, I had maybe a week to think up an alternative to Skippy's second target. I needed to put my thinking cap on. Chapter 4. Before we investigated the abandoned space station for real, we practiced maneuvers in vacuum and zero gravity. I ordered the ship to halt in interstellar space, and Desai flew the flower a short distance away to act as a target. Then, Several teams practiced getting into a small dropship, flying over near the flower, and people in suits crossed the remaining distance to the flower as an assault team. Using Krestang-powered armor suits in deep space was very different from playing around with them in a cargo hold. Many times Skippy had to seize control of suits to prevent the wearers from hurting themselves or others. We all learned together, slowly. The suits by themselves had small thruster units, which allowed the wearer to prevent spinning out of control. The suit thrusters weren't much use for flying across distances. We had a sort of jetpack that could be attached to a suit. The jetpacks were bulky, and we only had 14 of them, and we shouldn't need them to get across the short distance between a dropship airlock and the space station. What we practiced was one person launching him or herself from the dropship's airlock, carrying a line. When the line was firmly attached to the flower, the rest of the team followed by pulling themselves along the line. We also practiced recovering people who had gone spinning off into space. That was good practice for our inexperienced dropship pilots. And if any of those people had gone spinning off into space by accident, that only made the recovery exercise more realistic. One of those unfortunate people who had accidentally gone spinning off into space and needed to be recovered had a name like Schmo Bishop. That guy really felt like an idiot. After 2 full days of intensive exercise, during which every Spec Ops team and every pilot had multiple opportunities for practice, I was satisfied that we were ready enough to investigate the space station for real. We approached our very first target slowly and carefully, initially jumping into the far edge of the star system and sitting there quietly for 18 hours. Our passive sensors listened for any signs of activity, no matter how faint, and found nothing. Next, we jumped in about 1,000,000 kilometers from the target and listened for another 6 hours, although Skippy complained that he'd gotten all the useful data in the first 3 hours. So I listened to him complain for hours. That was a real treat for me. Finally, we went to battle stations and jumped within 100,000 kilometers of the supposedly abandoned space station. The pilots were on a hair trigger for an emergency jump away. They didn't need to wait for an order from the duty officer. Skippy, I asked anxiously. What do you think? Is this place really abandoned? Give me a break, Joe. I'm stuck with the speed of light here. Everything is incredibly freaking slow. There are no ships in the area. The whole area certainly appears to be dead. Nothing out there is generating power. What I can't tell yet is whether there are any hazards like stealthed mines. That's what I'm scanning for now. With this ship's crappy sensors, it will take an hour for a full grid search. I have to warn you, Joe. In order to verify there are no booby traps inside the station, we need to move the ship close. I'm talking about physical devices like explosives attached to airlocks, that sort of thing. I need to be closer, like within 12,000 kilometers. Oh. 12,000 kilometers. That sounded way too close to me. The distances involved in space combat were hard to comprehend. All my military experience involved line-of-sight warfare. Even in space, with nothing between me and the target, I couldn't actually see anything from 12,000 kilometers away. The problem with space combat was the enormous distances involved, distances so vast that even light took seconds or minutes to cross the gap. Against the distances separating combatants were the speeds of the weapons, masers, particle beams, hypervelocity railguns, missiles that could accelerate at 5,000 times the force of gravity. From our position a mere 100,000 kilometers away from the station, we were in danger from speed of light weapons, which our shields could deflect long enough for us to jump away. If we went in only 12,000 kilometers, a railgun or even a missile could close that distance, punch right through our shields, and knock out a reactor before we could jump. Did I want to take the risk of bringing the ship in that close? Can we send a dropship instead? No, I need this ship's sensors. This may all look like magic to you monkeys, Joe, but this is technology, and even for me it has limits. Damn. All right, pilot, I said to Desai. Bring us in. If you think anything is a threat out there, don't wait for me. Jump us away. Aye, aye, sir, she acknowledged. There were no threats, and, Skippy declared, no booby traps. At least no booby traps in the outer layers of the station structure. The space station appeared to be exactly what that data Skippy captured said it was, an abandoned wreck. From 12,000 kilometers, we could clearly see holes had been blasted in it, jagged holes, and there were structures that had been torn away like tissue paper, with pipes and cables sticking out. Because people could get tangled up in those cables flopping around, we needed to avoid those areas. That was not a problem. We located several airlocks with no obstructions and easy approaches for a dropship. There was also an open docking bay, plenty large enough for several dropships. That was tempting. Maybe too tempting. I wanted a dropship to be able to get away quickly. That meant avoiding confined areas like an open docking bay that could be a trap. What I decided was for a single one of our smaller dropships to go in with two pilots, plus me, Giraud, and two others. Giraud had removed the healing sleeve from his arm and found that it was very nearly as strong as the other arm and had declared himself fit for duty. Dr. Skippy agreed. That was good enough for me. Desai backed the Flying Dutchman off to 50,000 kilometers away, and I left Chang in command. As the two pilots of the dropship were British, I chose Captain Zhou of the Chinese team and Captain Chander of the Indian team to go in with me and Giraud to make our initial exploration team truly international. It was very important, I thought, to avoid the appearance of me playing favorites among the five nations that comprised UNEF. The pilots parked the dropship 50 meters away from the airlock we selected, and we opened the dropship's own airlock. Giraud went first. He flew across the 50 meters of vacuum and missed the airlock by only a meter. He was able to grasp a handhold and pulled himself over to the airlock and attached the line. I followed, with the Indian and Chinese soldiers right behind, pulling ourselves along the line. The armored glove of Giraud's hand touched the airlock door, and nothing happened.
"I suppose it's too much to hope the power is still on," he said, bending down to peer at the dust-covered panel to the right of the door. "After all this time..."
Moving as carefully as he could, he tried to brush the accumulated layer of dust away from the panel. Most of it smeared or clung to his gloves.
"That didn't work," he complained. "We should have brought a brush with us, or a towel. Where did all this dust come from?"
"Debris from the battle that caused the station to be abandoned," Skippy explained. "The station's surface was slightly magnetized from its defensive shield. When the shield was deactivated, particles were attracted to it. There is not that much dust, Captain. The problem is your gloves are only smearing it around."
"You see any lights on the panel, Giraud?" I asked.
The view from his helmet camera was available on the inside of my helmet faceplate. I could toggle the display either on my left wrist pad or with my chin. Although I hadn't quite gotten the knack of doing it with my chin, I kept flipping the display back and forth annoyingly. The view from his helmet camera was distracting. He was moving around too much. I pulled myself over next to him, far enough away not to hover over his shoulder and distract him.
"It's hard to tell," he answered. "The light is very harsh here, without an atmosphere to filter it."
Giraud had a good point. All of our zero-gravity training had been in deep interstellar space with artificial lights provided by the Dutchman, the Flower, or a dropship. I should have thought of how being in intense starlight would affect people in suits.
"All right, we can't stay out here. Try the handle," I ordered.
The door, like almost all airlocks, had a manual release mechanism for use in case of power failure. This door had a nice, big, obvious lever, painted yellow and red on the right side.
"Trying it now?" Giraud said.
I could see his right hand reach out and grasp the lever, then turn it to the left. Immediately a loud trilling sound blasted out of my helmet speakers.
"Get out of there!" I shouted. "Retreat!
Wait. Wait, everyone wait!"
I recognized that trilling sound from somewhere.
The trilling sound repeated. Then I heard voices. Human voices. It was difficult to make out what they were saying.
"Skippy, what the hell is that?"
"Oh, that's Soulfinger by the Barquets."
Oh, my God, what the hell is that song doing all the way out here?
I looked around. Everyone I could see had their mouths agape with astonishment. Why in the hell did a Kristang space station abandoned hundreds of years ago have a human 1960s funk R&B song as a door alarm? My brain almost locked up in confusion.
"What?"
"Duh. It doesn't, Joe. The real airlock alarm is a boring beep-beep sound. I spiced up the signal for you over your helmet speakers."
"Oh. Hey, you dumb monkeys thought that was real?" Oh, man, this is freaking hilarious. Oh, damn, Joe. You should have seen the expression on your faces. Man, now that was truly priceless. Damn. I've got to do that again sometime.
I was pissed. No, you got to do that again never. Understand? You scared the hell out of me, Skippy. I could have been dangerous if someone had moved too quickly and been injured. Everyone, do you see now the crap I have to put up with from our friendly beer can?
Colonel, Giraud responded, I've told you before. Anytime you want Skippy to take a long ride out an airlock, you let me know. I'll be happy to do it for you.
We got the outer door open, and then the inner door, and discovered there was a thin residual atmosphere in parts of the station. Skippy warned us not to try popping open our faceplates and sniffing the air. It was too thin, he reported, and contaminated with dangerously toxic chemicals left over from the battle. Skippy didn't need to warn us. No one was tempted to open our spacesuits. The inside of the station looked very much like the inside of the Flower, a standard Cristang design that had changed little in several hundred years. Our captured frigate, the Flower, itself, was almost 200 years old, and Skippy said the Cristang were still building frigates that were almost identical today. Our investigation of the space station took 2 full days, and was a complete bust. We found only a few useless pieces of Elder artifacts. It wasn't clear who was more bitterly disappointed, me or Skippy. After 46 straight hours of rotating teams in and out of the station, we had poked our noses into every nook and cranny of the place and not found anything useful.
Skippy, is there any point to us staying here longer?
The Cristang put a space station here because an Elder starship broke apart in orbit. Is there a chance they missed something? Should we scan space around the planet, see if we find any Elder artifacts?
I already did that, Joe, Skippy responded. Space around here is empty of anything useful. The lizards did a good job of picking up all the valuable pieces. They should have. The station was operational here almost 200 years before the conflict damaged it. Plenty of time to survey every cubic meter of space for 500,000 kilometers from the planet. Even dum-dum lizards couldn't miss finding all the good stuff when they have 200 years to do it. The answer is no. There is no point to us remaining here any longer, unless you find it useful for crew training. The Flying Dutchman had hung motionless in space, exposed for far too long. I wanted us to get the hell out of there and onto our next objective. Our next objective, which we still hadn't decided on. I ordered an end to the exploration effort as soon as the Chinese team aboard the station could be extracted. Colonel Chang, I said over my Z-phone, we're pulling out. Get your team back aboard the dropship as soon as you can do so safely. Yes, sir, Chang replied. This is a good opportunity for training, but there is nothing useful for us over here. We'll be back aboard the Dutchman within an hour. News that we were pulling out quickly spread throughout the ship, and within less than 10 minutes, Skippy called me while I was in my office. Joe, Dr. Venkman is on her way to see you. The science team asked her to talk to you about...
Skippy, are you about to tell me something you overheard? Remember the talk we had about privacy?
Sure, but... Does whatever you heard pose a threat to this ship?
No, but... Listen, Skippy. You want people to treat you as a person and not as a computer, right?
Yes. Here is what a person would do, assuming the person is a friend. He would simply say something like, Heads up, dude, Venkman's on her way to pester you.
I am not calling you dude, Joe.
How about chum?
Damn, Skippy. You need some context of your understanding of slang. Nobody has used the word chum that way since, like... Nerdy English boarding schools in the 1930s. Chum is fish guts you throw over the side of the boat as bait.
You sure about that?
Pretty sure, yeah. You call someone chum, and that majorly sets off their social awkwardness alarm.
Damn. You monkeys just came out of the freaking trees, and already you've got inscrutable social rules.
All right. How about if I simply say, Joe, Venkman's on the warpath, and she's on the way to your office?
Now that's cool, Skippy. You're getting the idea.
Unbelievable. An entire galaxy for me to learn about after being asleep for 1,000,000 years, and what am I cluttering up my memory with? The current social customs of filthy, ignorant monkeys. Oh, man, I am totally wasting my life.
How much unused memory do you have? Like, I tried to remember a ginormous number that was in some Wikipedia article I glanced at. It's measured in yottabytes, something like that.
Ha! A puny yottabyte!
For a moment he was laughing so hard he couldn't speak.
Damn, that is precious. Joey, a yottabyte is such a tiny part of my memory capacity I couldn't measure something that small. A yottabyte?
He chuckled.
That's a good one.
Uh-huh. So you learning about monkey... damn it! Now you've got me calling us monkeys. Info about human social customs doesn't take up a significant part of your memory, so what's the harm?
The harm?
What's the harm in a few worms and an apple, Joe? What's the harm in a few bacteria on your food?
It's the contamination that I'm worried about.
Come on, it wasn't that long ago that the social customs of your species were limited to picking lice out of each other's fur and eating the lice. Yuck.
Hey, those lice have got to go somewhere. They're loaded with protein.
Oh, my God.
See? It's having that kind of thinking anywhere in my memory that worries me. To have monkey ideas in my...
Hello, Mr. Or is it Captain? Venkman knocked on the frame of the door to my office. Or Colonel Bishop. They didn't give us a briefing on military protocol before we left.
Hello, Doctor, I said, rose from my chair and gestured for her to sit.
And my rank is Colonel. My position aboard the ship is Captain. I guess you call me Colonel. That's the easiest, I think. Very well, Colonel.
She glanced around my office. Nothing more than a Theranin storage closet that had been emptied out and outfitted with a desk and three chairs. And a small cabinet that, so far, didn't have anything in it. The only items I had added were a laptop that I rarely used, an iPad that I used all the time, and a coffee mug that I'd taken from the galley and not yet returned. No paper, no pencils or pens, no calendar with pretty landscape photos, not even a photo of my family. I should have brought one. There hadn't been time before we left.
I'm told that you have ordered the ship to prepare to leave this star system, she said, to proceed to the next target, because we did not locate an Elder communications node here. The science team, myself included, would like you to reconsider. We would appreciate an opportunity to collect more data about this system. We have been using the ship's extraordinary sensors and have gathered valuable information. However, the data we've collected to date presents an incomplete picture. Without a complete data set to analyze, we won't be able to draw any conclusions. And none of the science team has been aboard the alien station yet. We've seen the video sent back by the Special Forces teams. It is not the same as being there.
This was a conversation I didn't want to have. Shouldn't need to have. We had covered this subject already.
Before we left Earth, I wrote down our mission objectives so everyone who signed on would understand exactly why the Dutchman was going back out, and so they were completely 100% aware of the risk they'd be taking by coming aboard. My hope had been to discourage people from coming aboard. It hadn't worked. Here the objectives are in easy-to-read bullet format, something I'd seen recommended in officer training somewhere. 1. Prevent other species from discovering humans had stolen a warship and were involved in shutting down a wormhole. 2. Where it doesn't interfere with item 1, keep Skippy satisfied that we are making a serious effort to help him contact the collective. 3. Where it doesn't interfere with items 1 and 2 above, return the crew safely to Earth someday, if we can. Like that's ever going to happen. That last sentence wasn't actually part of the written objectives, it was my own comment. Now you might think the order of the first two items were reversed, that the whole purpose of the Dutchman going back out was for Skippy to contact the collective. You would be correct about the purpose of the trip, however that was not the primary objective for the crew. We owed Skippy our loyalty. We didn't owe him so much loyalty that we would risk the safety of our home planet and our entire species. Humans stealing a starship was bad enough. The Theranin would be immensely pissed. But starships being destroyed or captured, even by lesser species, was not all that unusual. If the Maxalks or Rindaloo ever learned humans had a way to manipulate wormholes, a technology even they could only dream of, they would rip our planet apart to get our secret. And you might think Objective 2 should be simply help Skippy contact the Collective. You would be wrong there. We didn't know whether it was possible to contact the Collective, even whether they still existed, or had ever existed. Skippy's memory in that area was not the greatest. All we could do is make Skippy happy that we were keeping up our end of the bargain until he either contacted the collective or gave up. Keep Skippy happy that we were making a sincere effort to help him, whether we actually were able to usefully help him or not. In the back of my mind was a time limit of maybe a year that we would devote to helping Skippy. If we hadn't found a way to contact the collective by then, my plan was to gently persuade Skippy to give up that particular quest. How I could convince a stubborn alien AI who could devote 1,000 years to a task without thinking about it was something I'd figure out when we got there. For me, this constitutes fairly advanced planning compared to the way I normally do things. The most important objective for prospective crew members to read was number 3. Not so much the text of that objective, but its position in the mission objective's order of priorities. Our return to Earth, our survival, was 3rd in line. Everyone needed to understand that. If they didn't believe it, they could go stare at the collection of self-destruct tactical nuclear devices in one of our cargo bays. Perhaps even more important for prospective crew members was objective 4. Oh? There is no objective 4 on the list, you say? You are correct. There is no 4th objective like learning important sciencey stuff, or exploring the galaxy, or getting intel about our potential enemies, or gathering useful advanced technology equipment, or even engaging in special operations warfare against the enemies of mankind. If we could do any of those not one of our objectives things without interfering with the 3 stated objectives, then great. If not, that's tough. I was not going to risk mission success or lives to make our science team happy, and I sure as hell wasn't going to approve any combat operations unless we absolutely had no choice. Or, I guess technically, unless engaging in combat was a better option than not engaging in combat. If that meant our gung-ho special forces and brainy science team were unhappy and bored, so be it. In fact, I would consider our mission a complete success if we were able to return to Earth safely without a single dangerous or interesting thing happening. Semper tedium could be our motto. Always boredom. I'd be happy with that. Which is why I was mildly irritated that Venkman brought up the subject now. Actually, not irritated that she raised the question. She had a right to ask, just as I had a right to say no. What irritated me was her attitude. That I had ordered the Dutchman to prepare for departure. Only because of my ignorance, I couldn't see the potential for important scientific discoveries right where we are. But what I wanted to do was tell her flatly no, hell no, and not to question my orders again. Doing that would have only proved her point that I was too young and inexperienced to command a starship, or for that matter, a rowboat. Slapping her down would have felt good. Commanders don't often get to do what feels good. They have to do what is good for the mission, and sowing dissension among the crew would have hurt morale. No matter how large the Flying Dutchman was, we had 70 people living in a limited space, seeing the same bulkheads every day. At least I, and most of the soldiers and pilots, had been able to get off the Dutchman, going over to the Kristang space station and look at something different for a while. The science team had been stuck inside the ship since they came aboard. I tried to let her down gently. Doctor, I appreciate your eagerness for scientific inquiry, I said, surprising myself at using such fancy words. And I need to balance that potential gain in humanity's understanding of the universe against the risk of us being discovered here. The longer we remain here, the greater the risk to the overall mission and to all our lives. This star system, particularly because it previously had a Kristang presence, has an unacceptably high risk that enemy ships could jump in here at any moment, and we can't risk that. I'm sorry, Doctor. You may use the ship's sensors as long as you do not interfere with the crew until we are ready to jump.
Captain, perhaps we...
Dr. Venkman, I waved a hand to stop her from talking. You may be used to an academic setting where discussion and debate are encouraged. This is a military vessel, a warship. As the commander, I welcome advice from my staff. However, once I have made a decision, it is final and not open to debate. We might be traveling between the stars together for a long time. I thought it important to lay the ground rules early and avoid problems later. I was 100% right. I still felt like a jerk. Chapter 5. The abandoned space station was somewhat of a disappointment in terms of our not finding an Elder communications node there. Thinking longer term for the mission, It was a great success, in my opinion. All of our pilots had opportunities to fly during a real mission, and all of the Spec Ops troops gained experience with powered armor spacesuits in a real operation. All of the troops, by the time we left the space station behind, had experience free diving in space. Other than a few very minor incidents that were dealt with quickly and professionally, I felt everyone had passed the test to be a space diver, and I asked Skippy to fabricate a special badge to wear on their uniforms. The badge was based on the U.S. Army's Free Fall Parachutist badge, with the difference being we replaced the tail feathers at the top with an arc of three stars. Pilots received spaceflight wings, similar to the Army Aviator badge, with the center shield replaced by a five-pointed star. Sure, the new badges were not official, and UNEF may frown at the idea if we ever got back home. In the meantime, the crew were thrilled to be wearing badges that no other humans had qualified for. My awarding of badges began the process of Lieutenant Williams warming up to me, slightly. After the award ceremony, we had a party in the galley, a party that spilled out into the corridor because our galley wasn't large enough. The strongest beverage available was iced tea. I took a tall, cold glass and made my way over to Williams, who was talking with his four-man SEAL team. Pointing to the Navy Special Warfare insignia he wore, I said, "Lieutenant, we need to change the acronym for your team."
"How's that, sir?" he asked warily.
"SEAL is Sea, Air, Land, right? After today, it should be SEALs for Sea, Air, Land, and Space."
"I think you're right about that, sir," he said with an ear-to-ear grin.
Garcia asked,
"What would the plural of that be? SEALses?"
"Oh, man," Skippy interjected. "Do not ask Joe anything about grammar. He butchers the language horribly. Lieutenant Williams, sincere congratulations to you and your team." "For reals, Skippy?" I asked, figuring he was inevitably going to add a disparaging comment about monkeys.
"For reals, this time, Joe. Considering that you are, after all, a barrel of primitive monkeys, this crew has accomplished a lot in a short time. I have to give you props for that."
I am not a morning person. I am not even a mid-morning person. As a soldier, I have to get up early, and I managed to do it. It still doesn't come naturally. And because of the crew schedule that some idiot put together, an idiot whose name rhymes with Schmo Bishop, my duty shift on the bridge started at 4 a.m. ship time. So I dragged my ass out of bed an hour early, time enough for a shower and a cup of coffee. Without coffee, I was mostly non-functional in the morning. What had caused me to wake up an hour early wasn't an alarm or Skippy. It was anxiety. We had gotten lucky checking out the abandoned space station. Lucky not in the sense that we found something useful. Lucky in that we had found the entire star system abandoned and that we hadn't gotten into a fight or had to plan some sort of risky combat. The potential for combat had gotten the special forces keyed up and kept them focused and gave them experience using powered armored spacesuits in zero gravity and hard vacuum. That was all good. What wasn't good was our next target was still way too dangerous. When we left the abandoned space station behind, we had set course for the second target because we didn't have an alternative. The advantage of the second target was that Skippy knew for sure there was a comm node there. The disadvantage of the second target is that the whole area was closely monitored by the Maxulks and by Sentinels. "Skippy, I got a question."
"Good morning, Joe. I'm going to ignore your poor grammar for the moment."
"Poor grammar?" I asked, surprised.
"You have a question, Joe. You don't got a question."
"At least you didn't say you got's a question. Damn, you already butcher the English language enough with your terrible accent."
"Accent? What's wrong with the way I talk?"
"I talk the way every native New Englander north of Boston talked. Normal. Everybody else had a terrible accent."
"What's wrong?"
"Let's start with the way you pronounce car, like car. You leave your R's out of everything. Tell me, Joe, were your ancestors so poor they had to sell all the letter R's?"
"No, Skippy, we save all those R's so we can use them on words that should have an R at the end but don't. Like, my Uncle Nam retired to Weya," which I pronounce Nam and Weya.
"Well, that's easy. He's in Florida."
"Wrong.
See, he lives in Florida. And the capital of Maine isn't Augusta, it's Augusta."
"Wow. Incredible. How did you and your buddy Cornpone ever manage to communicate? With your Maine accent and his southern drawl, it's like neither of you is speaking English."
We don't speak English, Skippy. We speak American, and we manage to communicate just fine, thank you. If you say so, Joe. I have noticed you tone down your accent around most people. Like at home, you say, aya, but here you say yes, or yeah, or uh-uh. When you visited your parents before we left Earth, you were all like, aya, and wicked pissa, and your father shot a deer, and your mother was cooking pasta for spaghetti. Most of it was utterly incomprehensible to me. Aya, you gots to pay attention there, Skippy-o. Oh, forget it. What is your question? We started looking for this calm node dingus in places where some database said it should be, right?
Aya,
Skippy said with a chuckle. Don't you usually look for something in a place you know where it is?
Duh, yeah. That's not my point.
You so rarely have a point, I felt safe to assume this time was no different. My sleep-addled brain being not ready for snappy comebacks, I ignored his trying to bait me into an argument. My point is, we hit that asteroid base because you knew that place had a comm node. There are other places that have a comm node for sure. We decided those places are too risky, too tough for us to hit.
In your opinion, they are too difficult, he said sourly.
Ignoring him, I continued. Next, you looked at places that might have one of these Elder Comno thingies, because the place is known to have a bunch of other Elder crap, right? If this conversation is going to be you telling me a bunch of obvious stuff I already know, I'll tune out for a while and let you talk. Wake me when you're done. Can we go one step further?
Damn it. Now you have my attention, on the infinitesimally tiny chance you might say something monkeys consider intelligent. Go ahead, amuse me.
The first step was to look where we know there is a comm node because somebody found an elder site, got a comm node, and logged it in a database. We already did that when we raided the asteroid base on our first mission. The second step is to look where there might be a comm node, right? A place where there is a bunch of other elder stuff logged in a database, and they might have a comm node also.
So far, I am not blown away by your logic.
So step three, I continued to ignore him, is for us to look in places that should have comm nodes, but they aren't in a database because nobody has found those elder sites yet.
Huh? I'm not following you. How are we supposed to look in a site that hasn't been found yet?
By you figuring out where the elders would have put stuff, comparing it to a map of elder sites the Theranin and Giraptha know about, and determine where there should be elder sites that nobody knows about.
By how? Guessing?
He snorted. No, by... I searched for the right word to use. I don't know, extrapolating, inferring, deducing, predicting, whatever you want to call it. You know the elders better than anyone in the galaxy today. You can figure where they would likely have had colonies, space stations, that sort of thing, right?
Huh.
This time, his huh wasn't a question. You have a map of elder sites the Theranin know about and sites the Giraptha know about, right?
Yes. The two mostly overlap. There isn't much one side knows about that the other side doesn't also know.
This war has been going on for a very long time. Much territory has swapped back and forth several times.
Can you do it?
You want me to predict places where we, in this one ship full of monkeys, will find elder sites that have not yet been discovered by advanced species who desire nothing more than to find technology the elders left behind. Species who have entire fleets of ships searching for elder technology.
That's about it.
Yeah. You told me the galaxy is vast, bigger than I can imagine, that even now most of it is unexplored.
It's unexplored, Joe, because most of the galaxy isn't worth exploring, or it's too far from a wormhole.
I notice you haven't answered my question. Can you do it?
I'm thinking.
Think faster.
Joe, this is actually not a 100% completely awful, terrible, stupid, brainless idea.
Very likely, very, very likely, this is a tremendous waste of my time. However, I am intrigued about how much this will test my analytical capabilities, so I'll do it. This is going to take a while. I'll need to run simulations.
A while as in you already did it between, say, a need and two?
Not this time, smart guy. Go, I don't know, get some coffee, eat a banana, scratch yourself, do some monkey thing, and I'll let you know when I'm done. Don't bother me in the meantime. I'll be super extra busy in here.
I took a quick shower, got dressed, walked to the galley, drank a cup of coffee, and chatted with a couple people. Then I walked to a porthole to look through the tiny window at nothing, because there is not much to see in deep interstellar space. Before going on duty, I got a second cup of coffee and headed for the bridge. The whole time I'd been expecting Skippy to shout in my earpiece that my idea was stupid and about how monkeys only wasted his extremely valuable time. 32 minutes had passed since Skippy began his analysis. This was an eternity in Skippy time. He remained silent until I was halfway to the bridge.
"Joe, I have good news." "And bad news," Skippy announced.
Uh-oh. Skippy's idea of good news could be bad, so I answered carefully.
"Give me the good news first, please."
I stopped and leaned against the bulkhead. If he was going to tell me how stupid I was, I'd rather not be on the bridge where the duty crew could hear it.
"The good news is I found some very good prospects for elder sites that have not, as far as I know, been discovered by other species. You are right. Although my memories are substantially blocked, my familiarity with the elders allows me to extrapolate where they should have had colonies or other installations. What I did was..."
I let him talk without interrupting, even though his rambling on about statistics, metadata, and collating sensor mapping data from dozens of species went way over my head. He was proud of what he'd accomplished. It was likely only he could have run such an analysis in so short a time, if at all. When there was a split-second pause in his non-stop talking, I took the opportunity to stop him from rambling on.
"Amazing, Skippy. That is amazing. Maybe this is why you have such enormous processing capacity, so you can find the elders' legacy stuff and protect it or keep track of it."
"Huh. I hadn't considered that." Before he could go off on a half-hour tangent of speculation about his origins, I asked, "Have you verified your data model by checking whether it predicts elder sites that are confirmed? Elder sites that other species do know about?"
"Verified my data model?"
Skippy asked slowly in amazement.
"Joe, where did you learn nerdy tech talk like that? I am mildly impressed, considering that it's you."
"It was in one of the 1,000-slide PowerPoint decks I'm supposed to study as officer training. Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have told him I was only repeating buzzwords."
"Did you do it?"
"Yes, duh. I told you I ran the model back to determine accuracy within a standard deviation of less than..."
"You tried to tell me. Remember, Skippy, you're explaining things to me, you need to dumb it down a couple notches. You can use real science-y math talk when you're discussing stuff with the science team."
"Fair enough. Breaking it down Barney style, pun intended, the answer is yes. My method of predicting the location of elder facilities is 96.7% accurate when compared with a map of elder sites known to current species."
"Damn, that is impressive."
"Ah, not so much if you really understood the data," Skippy said sourly. "The elder sites known to current species are the easy ones to find, obvious ones. The dum-dums inhabiting the galaxy today only find elder sites if they happen to trip over them in the dark, so to speak. Almost all of the elder sites that have been mapped are in star systems capable of supporting carbon-based life. The unmapped sites that I predict we should find are mostly in star systems centered around obscure stars, such as red dwarfs. I am not yet, of course, able to determine how good my model is at predicting the location of more obscure, minor elder sites. However, I am highly confident."
"Great. This time your good news is good news for sure. What's the bad news?"
"The bad news is where we have to go to check out these unknown potential sites. By definition, they are in out-of-the-way locations, else they would have been discovered by now. The model predicts only a handful of sites that are conveniently close to our location."
"Well, we will check out those..."
"Whoa! Whoa!" Skippy cautioned. "Not so fast, hotshot, let me finish. Of the handful of predicted sites, two are inaccessible now. The stars they are orbiting have become red giants and swallowed those planets. Another site was in a star system where the star went nova. Even if that site still exists, it is likely damaged and we'd have a hell of a time finding it now. It would have been thrown off its original orbit in an unpredictable fashion. Three other sites remain undiscovered, but are in star systems occupied by species with equivalent or superior technology to this ship. It would be substantially risky to enter those star systems."
"There's nothing we could check out around here?"
Oh, I didn't say nothing. There are four sites within a month of here. Two of those sites are good prospects, the other two are low probability.
Mm-hmm. Within a month from here. I liked hearing that. How long to check out all four sites?
You had to ask me that. Skippy sounded disgusted.
Calculating now.